Genetic treatments for serious illness are receiving a lot of research and discussion, but no gene therapy has made its way to the marketplace in the U.S. However, that may soon change after a decision by an advisory panel for the Food and Drug Administration.
The panel voted unanimously to recommend the approval of a genetic treatment for leukemia developed by Swiss drug company Novartis. Clinical trials showed promising results, but side effects are causing concern, and it's expected to be extremely expensive.
Elta Chero joins us now. She's a professor of law and bioethics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Elta, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
What can you tell us about this breakthrough treatment and how it works?
Well, basically, we're talking about people who have a certain form of leukemia that can be lethal and sometimes doesn't respond to chemotherapy. What the physicians have done in these studies is to remove cells from the patient's body and then use so-called gene editing, which is the latest form of genetic engineering, to alter those cells in a way that makes them better at targeting cancer cells, and then reintroducing those cells into the patient's body, where these now edited cells will go find cancer cells and kill them. And so it is an example of what's known as CAR-T therapy, and it's been a new exciting development in the world of medicine since about 2010.
What have we seen from the preliminary studies? How is it doing?
Well, right now, this particular form is doing incredibly well. So the latest study, which the Food and Drug Administration Advisory Panel was talking about a couple of weeks ago, had a success rate of up to about 85%. Now, this is with a small number of people, remember. It was about 55 people. There were children who had not responded to chemotherapy. So we're talking about folks that have already tried the standard approaches. And in this particular cohort, about 85% of them either got a remission or what looks like might be a long-term cure. Now, the others either developed the disease again, never actually went into remission. There were a couple of deaths. So this is not some kind of magic bullet yet. And for those that had a remission or a cure, there were also some very serious side effects, that company Novartis and other researchers are working hard to study and figure out how we might be able to avoid them. In particular, some really extreme inflammation that itself can be lethal.
And extreme fever in these young children.
Exactly. And the fever comes from the inflammation. So one of the effects of this treatment is for the body to release something called cytokines, and you get a cytokine storm which causes this inflammation. So in the future, ideally, it'll be possible to do this, remove cells, edit them so that their natural ability to fight cancer through the body's immune system is enhanced, but not have it at the same time also enhance the functions that cause this kind of cytokine storm.
This FDA panel recommended the treatment for people aged 3 to 25. Why did they limit their decision to younger patients?
Well, we're talking about a disease that has a particular effect on people in that age group. So we were looking for a group that suffers from the disease and where we've seen the non-response to chemotherapy. Now, this doesn't mean that it cannot be used with people who are older than 25, but that'll be a next step. Initially, the approval, which we expect will probably occur in September, will be based upon the very same kind of people who are in the trial. And then you slowly expand beyond that as we learn more about the therapy.
We're talking right now with Elta Chero. She is a professor of law and bioethics at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. We're discussing a genetic treatment for leukemia, which an FDA panel this month voted unanimously to recommend in treating this form of aggressive leukemia. Elta, when you treat leukemia patients, there's a traditional treatment, and now there is this type of treatment where you transform these living cells to attack the cancer. How do you decide then who gets a breakthrough treatment and who gets perhaps the chemotherapy and radiation and the traditional customary treatment?
Well, in fact, this particular development, this so-called breakthrough, as you're calling it, is really being used only for people who have failed on standard treatment because the side effects are so severe and the risks of actually getting sicker or even dying with this are significant enough that you don't start with this. You start with the standard therapies.
And this FDA panel, they voted unanimously. How much sway do these recommendations usually have?
They can be very influential. It's not that common, however, to get a unanimous recommendation. So that was really quite remarkable here. You know, the FDA has its own cadre of medical reviewers who are very expert at what they do. But when you have new and innovative kinds of therapies, or when you have clinical trials with complicated or ambivalent results, the FDA will frequently call in an expert panel. They have some standing panels for certain areas of medicine, and then sometimes an ad hoc panel just for a particular treatment. And they bring in people who are free of a conflict of interest. They don't have a financial stake in whether or not the particular treatment is going to be approved. And they have reams of information, fundamental data from trials, and then day or days even of testimony, and then a long conversation, and they do a kind of independent evaluation of the evidence. So given all that expertise and all of that deep research and review, their comments and their recommendations are often very influential.
This treatment, making an individual treatment for each patient, rewiring their individual cells, it can be very costly. Do we have any idea how expensive this could be?
Well, one figure I saw was $500,000. And this really is going to be one of the challenges. And we've seen it with some other kinds of biological therapies. The initial upfront cost can be exceedingly high. However, if it actually affects a cure, it means that you don't have decades of treatment, which over time could amount to far more than the cost of this one early treatment. So part of the problem is how do you create a system that can handle these very high upfront costs with the expectation of a savings down the line? And that in turn is made more complicated by the fact that the insurance company today that might be asked to cover the $500,000 treatment may not be the same insurance company this person is on 10 years from now when they're not using a lot of expensive chemotherapy and their future insurance company is now the one that's making the savings without having spent the money up front. And this is going to be a problem. How do we make sure that the savings and the initial costs are properly packaged so that insurance companies are incentivized to handle this kind of initial bill?
It's almost making humans like a living commodity.
It's not making humans a living commodity. It is part of what is going to become one of the trends in 21st century medicine. That is the use of gene editing in order to personalize treatments and be very precise in how it is that we either repair cells or grow new cells or, in this case, change cells so that they can become their own kind of biological drug. It's personalized medicine in the extreme, but it's not turning the person into a commodity. It's learning how to manipulate their cells to become drugs and curative devices.
If this is approved by the FDA, do you think we'll see a wave of genetic treatments for other cancers and other illnesses?
We're already seeing a tremendous amount of research in that area, and they come in different kinds of flavors. This one involves removing cells, editing them, and then reintroducing them. Another thing that would be very exciting would be to work with cells that come from generic donors so that you don't need to start with a patient's own cells, but you can have cell banks that have already been prepared with the various kinds of changes needed. That would be an immense improvement because it would make this much faster and it would simplify the manufacturing process, which right now is very individualized and rather tricky. We're also likely to begin seeing direct introduction of materials into the body that will, without taking cells out, will simply stimulate the body to start creating its own changes that would cure or at least ameliorate disease. These are things that are being worked on right now, and it's probably one of the most promising areas of medicine.
And quickly, Alta, as we wrap up, what is the timeline here as you look at it, getting this into hospitals and getting hospitals up to speed on how to do this type of treatment and when it will become more widely available to more patients?
That's a little hard to predict because right now, since it involves removing the cells from the patient, sending them off for special kinds of manipulation and then reintroducing them, we don't have a lot of sites around the country that are really able to perform all these steps. And indeed, Novartis for the moment is going to limit this to only about 30 or 35 hospital centers. I think it'll probably take years before this really becomes something that can become widely available.
Alta, thanks for taking the time to join us today.
Very happy to help. Thank you.
That was Alta Shero, professor of law and bioethics at UW-Madison, talking with us about an FDA panel recommending a genetic treatment for leukemia.